adults, no beer, no women, no zombie takeout. Nothing.
What's up? Welcome to episode 344 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a voicemail from Bodo. I should explain, he left this last week, and I decided to put it off because he got into some plot points about the Day the Earth Stood Still. Forgot to mention that I was putting it off. Sorry about that, Bodo. Here it is.
Hello, Uncle John. Scotto. Hope you guys had a happy Turkey Day, Thanksgiving. Back to Barada Nipto, the mighty court. You think after they left, Earth got their crap together to defeat them? I think it's probably the latter. We would definitely go into high research to develop weapons to defeat court and Klaatu. So that's my opinion about the movie. I always loved that movie. And then the one next week is even better. Have a little eye candy in that one. Keep up the great work. Love you guys. Bye.
Thank you, Beto. I tend to agree we would not get our shit together. We would just go on the attack.
Definitely. We would go military development.
Yeah.
to create better weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We had plenty of things we can research. There's plenty of material left behind.
Right, yeah.
And, yeah, that's the entire thing I was thinking that throughout that movie, when he was trying to show people, you know, different ways of doing things. Like, you know, we could just use that against you.
Mm-hmm. And Beto left another voicemail after that, basically just said, you know, apparently I left that one too late because, of course, I forgot to mention that we were putting it off again. Sorry about that. He just reiterated the question, which we just answered. And then he mentioned Forbidden Planet, mentioned that he recommended it. Thank you, because I completely forgot about that. And then said, Creature of the Id, or was it Leslie Nielsen's Flatulence? I can't remember, but it was a pretty good movie. I liked the special effects, and of course, Robbie the Robot. Who could not love Robbie the Robot? Keep up the great work. Talk to you later. Bye. Yeah, the special effects we will be getting into, and of course, Robbie the Robot.
Yeah.
And without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is Forbidden Planet, again, recommended by Bodo. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Ridiculous Comic Relief. Don't. Just don't.
And also brought to you by humans. We never change.
Mm-mm.
Not in 200 years. Not since the 1950s.
And nope. Not since however long there have been humans. I think it's like 35 million or something. Or 35,000, rather.
All right, so we have a expedition out in space. They are looking to recover, a reconnaissance of what happened to a colony that they had left and just never heard back from. And of course, it turns out that almost everyone is dead except for one linguistics professor. Mm. And his daughter, which I don't think they were aware was in the colony at the time because, you know, they'd been gone for a good 20 years or so.
Yeah, I got the impression she was born on the planet.
Yeah. So they find this, he warns them not to land. They land anyway. He warns them because there was a mysterious creature who killed the entire colony except for himself and his daughter. They really don't really, I'm kind of confused as to what really happened to his wife, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, knowing what you know later on.
Yeah, well, once you know what you know later on, it all becomes pretty obvious. But early on, early in the movie, before they give that reveal, they're very vague about it all.
Well, it's easy. I mean, you can kind of see what had happened. The reveal wasn't really that much, very surprising, honestly. But it could be just because were, you know, a 21st century audience. Right. And it was just kind of like, okay, we know.
And this movie is ridiculously influential, much like last week's.
Yeah. So knowing what we know, it's kind of weird to think about what happened to his wife. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they have a lot of distrust, of course, for this one survivor and his daughter, and he seems to know so many different things, and for some reason he keeps some secrets until it becomes apparent they're not just going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And weird things happen, so he finally just levels with them and tells them that this planet was once occupied by a highly advanced race, and this pretty much takes up a good portion of the movie. Yeah. Actually,
it's a big info dump. That's like the last half hour of the movie.
As to who these people were, what they advanced, and how they are, and then how they were mysteriously killed too, or just wiped out, really extinct, and then. Well, then how did they leave this power source? Well, you know, then they go to explain that. I mean, it's all the little nitpicks that they spend a good half hour, 45 minutes right. explaining to you. Every little nitpick. And, well, how did they do this? How did they clean their underwear? You know, I mean,
yeah.
Okay, we get it. Enough.
And they also explain some things that happened earlier in the movie that were a little odd.
Right. And so, of course, the calls were coming from inside the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spoiler, not a spoiler.
Yeah.
The enemy is from within, and
the movie is 60 years old. I think the statute of limitations is over.
The crew, of course, takes some casualties, but not too many serious casualties. And hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm. Got to roll back to the titles on this one again, because, again, they were very cool. The name of the movie, at the very beginning, it's these lasers coming together to, like, spell out the name. Very 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that every movie in the 70s that did that was ripping this off. And the rest of the titles were just kind of nice and curved and angular. It was very cool.
Well, my first thing was, wait a minute, this was in color?
Well, yeah, that did surprise me.
Like, wait, they put sci-fi in color?
And just, I mean, 5 years after the days they're stood still.
Sci-fi, even up to the days of the original Star Wars, was viewed as just a stupid shit genre that... And, I mean, everybody was telling Lucas, why are you fucking around with this? You just made American Graffiti. You can make whatever you want. But, I mean, in the 50s, it was even seen as less than that, you know? I mean, it was just seen something that little kids might be into.
This, for the time, had a pretty serious budget. I think it was $1.9 million.
Well, right, a serious budget, and they're doing Shakespeare, and, I mean, it is
loosely... Well, it's based on The Tempest.
Yeah, it's loosely based on The Tempest. It's not entirely The Tempest. Because The Tempest is really about the daughters betraying him, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this, although, I mean, she's easily lured away in this.
Yeah, a little too easily.
Yeah.
I'll get into that later.
Yeah, the resolution is very like, oh... We're just going to do this now.
The romantic subplot makes no sense, but there's also another issue I have later.
A lot of the subplots in this did not make any sense. Just crowbarred in.
I didn't know hyperdrives went back this far. There's a mention of a hyperdrive. That's how they went faster than light.
One thing that is very impressive about this is the technological aspect of everything.
Well, the effects are fantastic. I mean, the effects are on par with A New Hope, which was 21 years later.
Well, The effects are pretty much just Disney animation, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, one of the animators is from Disney. The guy who did all the all of the animation, the monster and all the animated effects was Joshua Medor, who worked at Disney.
Like Disney, I thought I saw them mentioned in the credits.
Probably because Joshua Medor worked there and they, let him off to work on the movie.
Right. Specifically Disney. And I think even Walt Disney had a credit in there too.
Possibly. Or just, they put the full name a lot of times with the company.
Right. Yeah, maybe that could have been it. But they had a piece of this. So they were trying to push sci-fi. And of course, it makes sense to branch out. They were doing children's entertainment.
Yeah.
And, sci-fi, they were trying to get an older audience finally.
Right. Now, there was one little gaffe that they made, and they didn't realize it at the time, but it's one of those things where you never put a year on science fiction, in the future. They said that humans didn't get to the moon until the late 2100s.
Now, I thought that at first, too, but are they talking about colonization?
Maybe they meant colonization.
Like getting there.
Yeah, I kind of heard it as getting there when we actually got there 13 years after the movie was made.
Right. No one thought we were going to do that, though.
Oh, true, true. They didn't think we'd get there until the late 2100s, and maybe that is colonization.
I mean, the very phrase, the moonshot, is, something that you think you can never accomplish, but right. We're going to try to do it.
Yeah. It was also odd to see Leslie Nielsen with dark hair.
Yes. He looks a little bit like Jordan Klepper.
Yeah.
Some scenes I thought he looked like young Lloyd Bridges.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. This was his film debut. So this is like the beginning of Leslie Nielsen's career. And a lot of people don't know he started off as a dramatic actor.
Surely you can't be serious.
That was one of my other titles I had. I was going to say, suggest Don't Call Me Shirley. It was weird to see him doing drama, because I think this is the first movie I've seen all the way through that he was doing drama in. I knew he'd done drama, but...
Well, there's another movie on our list called City on Fire, where he plays the mayor.
Okay.
From the late 70s.
Oh, so he didn't transition into comedy until maybe Airplane. I think Airplane might have been
his transition. Oh, yeah, Airplane was, yeah.
Okay, wow.
And that was even post-Airplane, I think, City on Fire. Or no, maybe it was the year before.
And he's a good, he was a good dramatic actor, at least in this, it's tough to say which he would is better at. But it's of course, he went completely into comedy later.
I think this shares a lot in common with George Lucas. The technical aspects, the effects are all just like top notch.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Can you believe they're doing this? But the human interaction side...
Some of the performances are a little iffy, yeah.
I don't even think it's the performances as much as the what they just have them doing, I mean, the whole cook subplot.
Oh, the cook, don't get me started. Horrendous. MGM insisted on changes to Cyril Hume's script by adding comic relief scenes with the ship's cook, played by Earl Holloman. Among these scenes was one in which Robbie the Robot responds to the cook's complaint about the lack of female companionship by bringing him a female chimp. The scene was reportedly not filmed. So it was going to get worse. One of my perspective titles was Kill the Cook. I have that in my notes. I have, if the scene where they dragged him off with a magnet was the last we saw of him, it would have been a solid 5.5. But then I have Dammy's back. Eventually I just say, fuck off, Cookie.
It was shoehorned in very obviously.
And it was just pure studio interference.
Yeah. So if they could come up with a version where he's edited out, I think that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Or a remake, but we'll get to that. I did like the lack of exposition in the beginning. They don't explain anything. They go in cold in the middle of it and expect you to keep up. And then there's this giant info dump in the last half hour.
Oh, yeah. And it's such a terrible time for it, too, because it kills any momentum the story could have built.
I liked it because I liked the angle they took with it, the psychological angle of the movie. I really liked that. So I was okay with the info dump, and I'm always one of those people. I want to know the backstory. I want to know the details of the alien species, But I know I'm in the minority on that.
I wouldn't mind knowing about them if we learned it a different it through the aliens themselves.
Yeah, it was kind of an obvious dump.
But it was like a sixth grade book report of that never existed, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a lot we could have gotten without it being explained to us.
True.
They were an advanced species. Yeah, they could come up with an energy source that would last on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot that was just assumed that we would never, ever be able to achieve, even in a million years. Because remember, they were talking of thousands of centuries.
They were around a long time ago.
Right. So they could somehow come up with a renewable source of energy. It's not impossible, guys. Especially if you could achieve things, you know, like hyperdrive and stuff.
Well, no, we had hyperdrive. That wasn't an alien thing.
Well, but exactly.
If we came up with it, the aliens could have done a lot more right.
Right. The aliens were millennia ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Even at this point in our evolution, it's kind of the whole problem of the film. It just assumes we never evolve and that the other species never evolves either.
True. Now, again, getting back to the beginning, I did like that they were trained military on the ship, not just, you know, a few random people, you know, exploring. Because you tend to get that with older sci-fi. It's like a skeleton crew of random people on a ship. In this case, it was a full crew, and they were trained. They marched down the steps of the ship. It was interesting in that sense.
Except for when you realize there was absolutely zero discipline on the ship.
Well, yeah.
Or what did I say? It was the discipline of the ship is incredible for a pirate ship.
Yeah.
There's a woman there.
Well, yeah, once Altera comes into the picture, that discipline goes out the window.
I guess because they didn't integrate our services. That's what this movie, I didn't even think about that. That's what this film assumes, of course, that we're going to be the 22nd century and not have an integrated service.
Oh, yeah, true.
All white dudes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In the ship. And then, wow, they meet one woman and the whole thing fucking goes to shit.
Mm-hmm. I did like the idea of Altera, though, because she was raised completely away from humans.
Right.
I've never seen that before with someone who wasn't feral. You know, you have, you know, the feral children stories.
Yeah.
But she was perfectly normal and not, you know, rational, but just had never encountered human society before, which was a really interesting outsider's look at human society.
Although that was the worst skin suit.
Well, yeah, when she was in the pool.
Yeah. The history. Like, we could see threads and shit, man.
Yeah. And her skirt must have caused a lot of controversy in 56.
Yeah.
Because she wears these really short 56? Skirts for most of it. Yeah, this is 56.
I know. That's what I was thinking, though. Like, she's a good 10 years ahead of her time in fashion.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to my big issue with the movie. There's a scene where Jerry, the first mate, is trying to get her to kiss him. Trying to explain, you know, basically taking advantage of her, almost, you know, assaulting her. Of course. Because it's the 50s. And the captain or commander, Leslie Nielsen's character, stops him, which I was happy about. And then he goes on this rant about how she should dress more modestly. 50s, fine.
Yeah.
Then it disappointed me. Because she goes, and not because of this rant, but because of it amounted to nothing. She goes on this great feminist rant about how she should be allowed to, you know, kiss whoever she wants and, you know, dress however she wants. Way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
And she rants to her father about this, and I loved it. And then she tells Robbie to make her a longer dress. And she hooks up with the commander. This great, way ahead of its time feminist rant that they just threw out the window for a convenient romantic subplot.
But you could tell they were setting it up even there because she was ranting because she liked him.
It's everything I hate about romantic subplots.
Well, I think what was terrible about it was him yelling about, you know, and his first mate for it, just because he wanted to get in there himself.
True.
And that, I mean, at first you're like, is he doing it to be noble? And they're like, no, he's just trying to get in there himself.
Oh, and we're missing Morbius, her father, the villain, sort of the piece. He's got this beard and this all black, you know, kind of foppish costume.
Which, of course, you know, he had to be the villain because he had the beard. And
right.
He's not a clean cut, you know, 50s guy.
But the two pre-John Sim masters from Doctor Who, whose names escape me at this point, both in the 70s and 80s, looks exactly like them. It's like the master was in this movie. I think they probably based the master's look on Morbius.
That could very well be. And I mean, everything about him, you know, the advanced intelligence and all that.
Mm-hmm. And then we get into some amazing special effects and sets that look like on par with A New Hope. It was incredible. And then there's the info dump.
I think the only technical aspect that I would argue with about this would be, well, they send the crew to find this lost colony that's lost without explanation. And when they get there, they're like, ah, there's no need for space suits. Everything's obviously fine here. It's like, you just lost a whole colony of people here.
Well, I had that in my notes initially, and then I just figured they could have monitored the oxygen levels and the temperature and all that from the ship and known that it was safe.
Well, sure, you can see the oxygen levels. Yeah, I'm sure the colony before them saw the oxygen levels.
Fair
what
point.
If there was a disease or something out there that wiped them out?
That's true. Would have been better to go out in EV suits. Yeah, that did catch my attention. But EV suits were not a thing at this point in science fiction.
I think they could have been, but then it would have been a whole, then we're filming dudes in spacesuits.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to see faces and all that stuff. It's why, you know, every planet on Star Trek was a Class M, except for maybe like one or two
right.
original series.
Yeah. Oh, a few more ways in which this was ahead of its time. It was the first science fiction film to depict humans traveling in faster than light starships of their own creation. First to be set entirely on another planet or in interstellar space, far away from Earth, and the first to use an entirely electronic musical score.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just pheromones. It's theremins. There are synthesizers. You know, and it's proper electronic music.
I'd been wondering when they... I mean, I guess they always had organs and shit, but an actual synthesizer... I didn't realize it was.
I mean, I'm guessing they were synthesizers. Far. They probably weren't keyboard synthesizers that we know of. They were probably patch cables and such.
Yeah, probably.
But still, still impressive. I also loved the effect of the monster's footprints. Because the monster is invisible initially. Yeah. And there's a scene of him leaving these giant footprints that was really nicely done, clearly a practical effect.
I thought Gallagher did a bit like that, where it was like an elephant climbing up a diving board.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Although, when he first hit the electric fence, which is basically what it was. Yeah. He kind of looked like a snail. And then later, you see him full-on attacking it, and he's kind of demonic-looking, of course. He's got a beard, just like the Master, a.k.a. Morbius, the only other character with facial hair. So it kind of connects them.
Who saw any of that coming?
I mean, I had heard, you know, Monsters of the Id. Well, actually, it was in Boda's voicemail. The Creature of the Id, yeah. And I kind of put that together because I was a psych major. But I do like that angle of it, that, you know, this technology that was created by this advanced alien species was bringing primal, deep-set fears and insecurities to life, literally, and turning them into monsters.
If they were that advanced, though, and, you know, the problem came about, I think they could have stopped it, you know?
Possibly. Although, then this movie wouldn't have happened.
Well, right. But that's kind of the problem with the movie, is that these humans that came that were only on the subject for, what, a couple days? They knew better than the guy who's been studying it for 20 years.
True.
They knew better than the race that was, you know, thousands of years ahead of them.
True.
You know, it was a very big pat on the back that, you know, we're going to be in space and we're going to do all this shit. And, you know, we've got it all figured out pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might get cock blocked by a tiger. I don't know.
On to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
New Line Cinema had developed a remake with James Cameron, Nelson Gidding, and Sterling Siliphant involved at different points. In 2007, DreamWorks set up a production with David Twohy set to direct. Warner Brothers reacquired the rights the following year, and on October 31st, 2008, Michael J. Straczynski, that would have been interesting, was announced as writing a remake. Joel Silver was to produce, less interesting. Not Joel Silver, I'm thinking of the other Joel, the bad one. Batman
Schumacher.
And Robin. Schumacher, I'm thinking of him, sorry, to Joel Silver. Yeah. Was set to produce. Straczynski explained
Robbie
that
can have nipples.
Straczynski explained that the original had been his favorite science fiction film, and it gave Silver the idea for the new film that makes it not a remake, not a reimagining, not exactly a sequel. His vision for the film would not be retro, because when the original was made, it was meant to be futuristic. Straczynski met with people working in astrophysics, planetary geology, and artificial intelligence to reinterpret the Carell backstory as a film trilogy.
Hmm.
So, prequels. In March 2009, Straczynski reported that the project was abandoned and that a new script was requested. So, it's in development hell.
I can see prequels to this, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the colony... You could even go, of course, before
the idea was the first prequel would probably be the colony, and then we'd go back to the Krells, you know, and what happened to them. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. I'm sure it'll happen again. The Day the Earth Stood Still got remade. I'm sure this will too.
They wouldn't make Keanu the captain, would they?
Yeah, why not go for the double?
Or Keanu Morbius.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be too many Morbius jokes, which is why I keep having trouble pronouncing it.
Oh, Larry Fishburne is Morbius.
Yeah, exactly.
Keanu's the captain.
That's yeah.
Great. That's your movie.
On the brains.
On the brains.
I actually really liked it. I mean, yeah, you have presented some good arguments. But my only real issues with it at the time were I hated Cookie. my issues with the romantic subplot and shooting the whole feminist angle in the head, and a couple of religious lines that I had some problems with. I'm still going to recommend it, though. I'm going for.
I think it's wonderful, technologically, in you know, visual and even just filmmaking. But as far as the script goes, it's pretty damn awful. I mean, the fight scene where they are, you know, firing at the creature. If you have, say, a distance weapon, you know, a laser gun, if you will.
Yeah. A big laser cannon.
Would you run up to hand-to-hand range the creature with that gun?
Right, right.
No, you would not. You know what I compare this to a lot? It was like watching the Orville, where... I mean, they've purposely put, like, 21st century people in this 24th century thing. But, I mean, we saw this 1950s dude bros in the 22nd century. I'm going three brains.
All right. And what have we learned?
When you're talking to a woman's father, don't mention the view from there.
And I learned that Anne Francis stars in Forbidden Planet. Just had to crowbar the reference in. Sorry about that. Actually, in all seriousness, I learned that I have seriously underestimated 50 science fiction movies.
Yeah.
After these two, I need to see more because, well, then again, the rest of them might be disappointing. I might be right about the rest of them. Who knows? All right. So until next time, and we'll be reviewing, well, 8 holiday horror shorts.
Oh,
8 short, holiday-themed short films. It'll be interesting. We need to discuss how we're going to do ratings for them. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And if you enjoyed the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Well, up until next week. No, we actually worked out, I think up until June, we're good. Yeah, I forgot we actually worked out the first 18 or 19 weeks of the year last week after the show. I think we're good till June. I'm not sure. And I don't remember what the last one is offhand.
It might be City on Fire, actually.
It might be. It's that one or be, two after.
That might be the last movie. It's not even the last movie, but that might be the movie that we...
The last one we have in order, yeah.
Because I think Hardcore Henry was the last one we...
Okay, yeah. Yeah, up to Hardcore Henry. It's a little bit after Grave of the Fireflies, which is our next anime. So it's in that vicinity if you're looking at the movie list. You'll also find the recommendations list. I thought this would make it. Apparently not, but you've again made some great points. Of course, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go synthetically fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Very well, but I wash my hands of all responsibility.
Forgot to mention this during the episode, but we have been talking about doing a movie night in January with our audience, whoever can make it. Probably be on some random Wednesday, because that's when we typically record, so we're available. We're going to be using a site called Rabbit, RABB.IT. It lets you watch movies with a group. I think the maximum is 25 people, which is probably less than we'll get, or more than we'll get is probably enough. We'll be lucky to get 5 people, I think. But yeah, we haven't decided what we're doing. We're probably going to put some polls up. Do we want a legitimately good movie? Do we want an enjoyably bad? And, once we decide that, which one do we want?
Yeah.
I'd be perfectly happy with some Neil Breen. You mentioned watching some 80s videos and mistying them.
Yes.
Also, speaking of mistying, the site has mic and webcam ability. So we can misty them.
Of course.
So that'll be fun. We'll be in touch with the dates when we all have all that decided. And there will be polls on social media for everything else. Talk to you next time.